study of evolution, and my big premise for this whole couple lessons is that evolution is touted as scientific. And yet it fails to live up to what real science and the scientific method are. I have, in previous lessons, examined five necessary beliefs of evolution, and that these things have nothing to do with science. They cannot be scientifically explained or defended. In fact, they violate all existing laws of science. That's one of the things I want you to see through this lesson, not to remember all the detail and necessarily every point, but to show you, or to for you to understand, for all of us Christians to understand, that what is being touted as science out there in the guise of evolution is not science. It defies common sense. It defies observation. It defies testing, because it can't be tested. It defies empirical evidence. These are all things that the scientific method is comprised of, yet they're completely lacking when it comes to this philosophy. And namely, there's just some things that we looked at in the first five lies. You're getting part two here, but we looked at something coming from nothing. Well, things can't just appear without purpose or explanation. And yet evolution says that they did and continue to do so, in fact. Life comes from non-living material, which is impossible apart from a miracle. But evolution says there are no miracles because there is nothing supernatural about the mechanical world. Order comes from chaos. Somehow chaos randomly and intelligently organizes itself, which is inexplicable because we've not seen this ever to happen naturally in the world. Complexity comes from simplicity. Ultimately, very simple, basic elements turn themselves into very complex ones. Simple life forms turn themselves into extremely complex life forms. Non-intelligence turns itself into intelligence. This just does not happen. I'm not saying that it's a stretch. This just does not happen. We have no evidence of it whatsoever. And yet that's what evolution teaches. And then time magically, miraculously, even though they don't call it a miracle, solves everything. It makes the impossible possible without explanation. So that's a brief rundown of what we covered already. I don't mean for you to digest all of that all at once, but we do have outlines for that lesson if you're interested, and I would recommend those. I want to be real clear here. I do not oppose evolution because I'm against science, which is what the evolutionists typically want to peg me as. You've got to pick. It's either science or God. And it's like, no, I don't have to pick. I can choose both, and because they are compatible. Science and God are compatible. But what my problem with evolution, though, is that it has never proved scientifically. Even worse, it makes claims that cannot be true, but that masquerades as the truth. And even worse than that, and here's the real rub, is that it defies God's existence and God's word. And that's really what it comes down to. That makes evolution not only a false teaching, but also a dogma. A dogma, by definition, is not science. It is a human point of view that lacks adequate grounds for support or believability. Okay, that's dogma. Basically, it's a human opinion about anything. You'll have your opinions about things. I've got my opinions too. When we press those as though they were the truth, then it becomes dogma. Okay? Not that we've ever done that before, right? Yeah, okay, we've all done that before. So we're not innocent in the matter ourselves, but we're trying, I hope, to get out of that mindset and to recognize there's opinions and human judgment, and then there's the truth, and these things are not interchangeable. Again, I want to be real clear here that I'm not saying that everyone who believes in evolution is purposely setting out to be a liar or is a liar. Our focus here in this lesson, in these lessons, has been on the belief system, not the followers. I'm not condemning individual people here, but I am condemning, and I have every right to condemn, a false doctrine that opposes God directly. Opposes his existence, opposes what he said, opposes who he is, and opposes everything that he has revealed to us. That is a false doctrine. And that's why I'm talking about that. That's the only reason I'm talking about that in front of you tonight. All right, so let's just dive into this then. The first thing of part number six of our 10 lies here is that information comes from non-information. In other words, highly complex, extremely precise information. Particularly, my greatest example here would be human DNA. okay, that something like human DNA inexplicably developed on its own over eons of time from zero genetic information. So we have space dust and rocks, which, by the way, themselves came into existence inexplicably according to evolution, and then those things somehow over eons of time, because remember, time solves everything magically. So over eons of time, that rock or that dust turned into what we have today as our modern human DNA. Richard Dawkins, surprisingly, he's an avowed atheist and evolutionist. He claims this, that there's enough information in one human cell, and by the way, you have trillions of these cells in your body. One human cell has enough information to fill 4,000 books, each containing 500 pages, or if you want to do the math, a 2-million-page book, which would be really, really hard to lug around. Okay, because just there's a lot of information. We're just talking about pages there. We're not talking about all the information that's on those pages as well. Okay, so just think about that. The 4,000 books containing 500 pages, that's one cell. Every single human cell has the blueprint to create an entire human body, including all the various organs and the brain and 11 interdependent systems, which I'll mention later. Each cell is likened to a small city, irreducibly complex, which is a fancy way of saying it needs all of its parts in order to operate. Take one part out and it doesn't operate. It can't function. So it needs all those parts, which tells you that those parts had to all come together all at once. Or another logical explanation would be they were created all at once. You do the math and figure out how that might have been. Each body has trillions of cells, all coded for different tasks, but a singular objective, and that is the survival of the body. That survival requiring nutrition, energy, and reproduction, repair, and defense. I was going to throw metabolism in there, but that's all part of the energy process there. According to evolution, all information in cells assembled themselves, or assembled itself, I should say, over time, or was assembled, they might say, from blind forces of nature. Blind forces which are never defined, never introduced to us, and yet we ascribe godlike decision-making capability to those things. So we have this idea that non-information creates information. And that is completely unscientific, because we don't see that in any other case in the world ever. Throughout all of human history, we have never seen that happen. We have no observable evidence of it. We have no empirical evidence of that. We can't reproduce that in a laboratory. It cannot be proved. It can't be tested. We have never seen it and never expect to see it. And yet it is verified as a factual, necessary component of evolution. In order for any useful information in any form to exist, it had to come from somewhere. There has to be a source of this information. Someone says, well, what about these rocks and space dust that turned into human DNA? If that were really true, then there would have to be an outside information source that is providing that information to these inanimate things to, first of all, make them animate, living things, and then to give them all of this information. And of course, evolution denies all of that or any of that. So it says, on its own, these things just appeared. The greater always goes to the lesser. We have to have more information going to lesser information, not the other way around. Keep in mind, when I say all this about cells, for example, the information in a cell has to not only be present, but it also has to be able to replicate itself into other cells. So not only does there have to be a process to store and use this information, but it also has to be able to transfer that information successfully to other cells as those cells die out and so on. You're talking some pretty powerful stuff here. You're talking some pretty complex chemistry and biology here, things that just can't happen. And it's not scientific to say that they do happen randomly, inexplicably, without a purpose, and certainly without oversight. That just doesn't make any sense. And in contrast to that, because I always want to provide here a contrast, we have God the Creator, who is our source of information. God provides all the information that we need. He is not only providing raw data necessary for human life and survival, but he has also organized that information in some way that it can be used successfully for the purpose intended. Romans chapter 1, verse 19, Paul says, that which is known about God is evident within them. Them simply means people in general. For God made it evident to them. In other words, the proof of the fact of a creator, the proof that we have a creator is right before our eyes. Look in the mirror. Look at the human body itself. There is sufficient proof right there that we have to have a creator. The fact that men refuse and reject that creator does not negate the facts, doesn't make the creator disappear. Our second point, spiritual consciousness coming from non-living material. The ability to think, to reason, to a clear or guilty conscience, the spiritual awareness of one's own existence and the afterlife. This all came from space dust and rocks. That's what evolution teaches. Evolution teaches that the world is merely material, in other words, it's made up of or comprised of physical elements, and it is mechanical, completely devoid of divine intervention or revelation or miracles. And yet, having said that, it cannot explain thought and conscience. In fact, your thinking process serves zero purpose given the premise. If we are truly a material and mechanical world without any divine intervention or oversight, then the reason that you, or the idea that you reason or think is completely useless. We don't need that. We just need you to be physical and mechanical, okay? We don't need you to think about that. Scientists claim that these things are the mere chemical transfer of energy within the brain, electrical, neuronic impulses or neural impulses of a profoundly complex human organ called the brain, which, by the way, appeared without explanation or blueprint or purpose. So all the thought that you have, all your discernment, your exercise of human judgment, all your memories, all your emotions, all your spiritual awareness, even your soul or what you call your soul is simply an extension of the physical brain, and all that came from blind forces of nature, which, by the way, created this brain, brought into existence this brain without a plan, without a purpose. Do you see how absurd this gets in a hurry when you start just mapping it out? When you read it in the textbook, it sounds so profound, like evolution states that, you know, but then when you start thinking it through, it's kind of like watching a Jurassic Park movie. On the screen, it looks believable. Wow, look at that. That must be real. And then you start thinking about it later, go, wait a minute. There's a lot of stuff here that really doesn't make sense. There you go, okay? So what we're doing then is we're just simply stepping back and we're looking at the movie, so to speak, after we've watched it, and we're realizing that there's a lot of stuff here that just doesn't make sense. Evolution says that your brain and its functions evolved over eons of time, but that begs the question. It doesn't answer it, and it doesn't explain anything, because what evolutionists are very fond of doing is using the thing being proved as the proof. Well, the reason why this is because of evolution. You say, well, how do you know evolution is? Well, because of the way it is. And then we go, you know, running around the tree like that there. And so that's circular reasoning. That's dogmatic. That's not science. Evolution necessarily implies that what you call the soul does not survive earthly existence. Evolution teaches, it has to teach, there's no other recourse here. Evolution teaches that when your body dies, your soul dies, therefore there is no afterlife, there is no reward, there is no consequence, there is no heaven, there is no hell, there is no eternity. You just simply cease to exist. It can't teach otherwise, because if it does, then it gets into metaphysics and spiritual and all these other things which it can't prove and complicate its own theory. And what that means then, according to evolution, is all of our learning, our wisdom, and all of our accomplishments, our memories, our acts of heroism and decency, all these things that we give credit to as being part of noble human life is literally for nothing. When you die, your soul disappears. It is as if you had never lived at all. It's kind of the bleak outlook of evolution. In contrast to that, God has made us in his image, as spiritual beings, capable of rational and spiritual thought, capable of knowledge, of especially knowing God himself and making a decision, capable of making a decision to be with him. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 11, it says there that God has set eternity in the heart of man. We can know that eternity exists, even though we can't wrap our mind around it. We understand that it's possible, that it's an idea that makes sense to us. 12 verse 7 in Ecclesiastes says that when the body dies, the soul goes back to God who gave that soul to that body in the first place. Ecclesiastes 12, verse 14 says that God will bring every act of judgment, whether it is good or evil, which is exactly what Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, where he says, "We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad." But of course, the evolutionist, if he's going to hold to his theory, he has to deny that there is a Christ, that not that there is a Jesus, but that there is a Son of God who has said these words that we're going to have to give ourselves account to, or give our account to, rather. Okay, so there's some denial going on there that is necessary in order to uphold this theory. In other words, we are not a specialized rock, according to God. We are not a robot. We are not a biological accident. We are divinely created human beings capable of decisions that affect our eternal existence. Someone says, well, that takes a lot of faith to believe in all that. Absolutely it does. It does take faith to believe in that. But not nearly as much as it takes to believe that we do not have a soul and that we just pop out of existence or even pop into existence based on blind forces of nature. That takes a lot of faith because there is absolutely no evidence for that whatsoever. Our faith, at least, is based upon physical evidence, moral evidence, historical evidence, and yes, biblical evidence. We have a reason to believe. A third point we can make here is that human needs and virtues come from non-human, amoral, which means there is no moral, impersonal, unmerciful, blind forces of nature. Non-intelligent nature gives what it does not itself possess. Somehow we became virtuous people, even though nature is not virtuous. So you're asking yourself, well, where'd all that virtue come from? Where'd all this noble thinking come from? What about love and generosity and hospitality and selflessness? Where'd all that come from? Well, it's just electrical impulses and neurons firing in the brain. It's just all going to go away when you die. That's what evolution is teaching. Nature, with a capital N, is evolutionist God. Nature is assumed to be all-powerful, all-knowing, able to make decisions, able to give direction to the development and of humankind and to provide all kinds of beneficial adaptations. And yet nature itself lacks any personal attributes. It is unseen, unexplained, impersonal, and inhuman force, kind of like gravity or magnetism, that is devoid of what we observe in humans, that creates things as it goes along, things that did not exist. It just creates them out of thin air, literally, and then ascribes them to us or gives them to us there. Human beings exhibit and crave things like love and acceptance, grace, mercy, forgiveness, charity, benevolence, selflessness. If you are a human being and have a pulse and are here listening to this, those are the things that you crave. And you ask yourself, where did you get those cravings from? And how in the world can they be satisfied by a purely material and mechanical world? These are completely contradictory to what evolution says is the survival of the fittest. There is no need for these things. We can survive without them if our world is purely material and mechanical. So then we observe in humans attributes and qualities that evolution cannot explain, and yet it's all chalked up to natural selection and science anyway. And I'm trying to tell you as pointedly as I can, that is not science and that is not rational. There's nothing scientific about that. There's nothing rational about that. And yet we're being fed day after day in the schools, in the public domain, in the media, in the TV shows, in Hollywood. We're being fed that evolution is the answer. And I'm telling you that it answers nothing. It is an empty philosophy that is completely devoid of any substance as far as proving itself to be true. In contrast, our God, the Creator, made man in His image. We have a logical and historical explanation then for why we have needs and why we have emotions, why we crave acceptance, why we need forgiveness. We have a reason for that now because we have a God who made us that way and who offers us those things. 1 John chapter 4:19 says simply, we love because He, God, loved us first, or first loved us. In other words, we give, we crave, we experience love because a loving God wired us to be that way, so to speak, and imparted His loving Spirit into our being. Remember, blind forces of nature can't give what they don't have, but God has love and gives that to us. We have a source for why we love. Galatians chapter 5, verse 22 and 23, Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit, which really, if you think about it, is a reflection of God Himself. I mean, it's just simply the attributes that we see in the divine Creator, these fruits here of the divine Creator Himself, His nature, His virtue, His emotions, His character. It is God, not evolution. It is God who has set us higher than the animals. We didn't just get there by accident. We were placed there, and placed there for good reason. Someone says, well, that takes a lot of faith to believe in that. Well, not nearly as much faith as it takes to believe that blind forces of nature are turning us into loving, giving, noble-minded people for no reason at all. Inexplicably. That takes a lot of faith because there's absolutely no proof for that whatsoever. This next one is a little bit more involved, so I'll just go through it as simply as I can. Interdependence, or systematic process, is evolving simultaneously, or we can just simplify it as simultaneous evolution. In other words, any system or function made up of several or many different parts had to appear all at once, at the same rate, evolving at the same time. Evolutionists claim that these systems developed through minuscule adaptations over eons of time. That is not a scientific explanation. That is called a human opinion, because there's absolutely no proof for that whatsoever. Not even science allows for such processes. Unfortunately, those opinions pose as facts, and then they're published in textbooks, and then they become truth because no one wants to, you know, challenge those, because then that we need God in order to challenge that. And of course, we're becoming a godless society. You can see where that's going. For example, bees require nectar to survive. Flowers need bees for pollination. Unless both bees and flowers evolve at the same rate and at the same time with the same ability to allow each other to survive, then both of them are going to die. That'll just be the end of it, right? The bees all die because there's no flowers. The flowers die because there's no bees. So we need both systems, so to speak, independent of each other, to evolve at the same rate at the same time, evolve things that are necessarily interdependent, because they can't exist or survive without the other. And to claim that both evolved at the same time not only defies logic and reason, but it is completely unscientific, because once again, we've never seen it, we never expect to see it, and it violates everything we do see naturally, in nature, that is. The human body is made up of 11 different interdependent systems, which means that you have 11 different systems in your body, none of which can survive on its own. All of them need each other to survive. How in the world did that happen? All at once, all evolving at the same rate, at the same time, into a mature human being, a modern human being, if you will. All working together, they all had to evolve together. And not only that, but during each stage of progress there, that the human being that they're part of still had to survive and reproduce as these systems are being improved. You're not just into astronomical odds here, you're into impossibility. What evolution is proposing in that scenario is impossible. Not just out there, impossible. And eons of time being thrown at it isn't going to make the impossible any more possible. The human reproductive system is a case in point. You can't produce a human baby without, let's just say it, male and female parts, okay? And according to evolution, both sets of parts had to develop without purpose, without design, without intelligent oversight, except of the blind forces of nature, over millions of years to the mature state that we see today. That is not science. That is an insult to our human intelligence to talk like that. In contrast, our God, the Creator, made human beings male and female, mature adults, all parts intact, all ready to procreate. No need for lies or wishful thinking, but rather we have a divine Creator who answers all the alleged problems that we might see there. He purposely designed the physical world with living creatures and non-living systems to all work together for a singular overarching purpose there, and that is to support human life. That's what everything is all about. Look around the world. You say, well, this is over here and that's over there. It doesn't have anything to do with it. It all has something to do with this. It's all part of the big system. Someone says, well, it takes a lot of faith to believe in that. Well, it takes considerably more faith to believe that all these interdependent systems in the world, in the human world, the animal world, the vegetative world, the material world, all just happened without any blueprint, without any plan, without any oversight, and without any God. And that leads us to the last point here, and that is that improvement just happens without a stated goal or a purpose. This is the idea that we are progressing or advancing without a standard or knowing what the final objective even is. Here, let me just put it in a silly analogy here for you. Now, suppose we are all getting into a spaceship, and we have no idea where this spaceship is going, but we keep being told that this spaceship is going to take us to a better place, a better life, and have a better existence, and we're all like, well, better than what we have? I mean, how is it better? We don't know, but it's going to be better. And so we're all going to say, well, where is this thing going? We don't know. It's just going, okay? We're going to go out in space, and it's going to be better, and it's going to be superior to what we have, and it will be a more advanced than everything else. And you're going to be convinced by that, right? No, if you have any intelligence at all, you are not going to step foot on that spaceship, at least not under those terms, okay? So I just think about the idea there that that's what evolution is proposing all the time, is that we are going off into better land, into superior land. We're going to get more and more advanced. And someone says, well, how do we know where that is exactly? Evolution shrugs its shoulders and goes, I don't know. Don't have a clue. No way of knowing. Why? Because there's no standard. There's no point of reference. It's like saying you're going to go north or south or east or west in outer space when you've gotten off of the Earth. There is no north or south. You have no point of reference. I'm referring specifically here to the language of evolutionists. And I'm not talking about evolutionists like someone on the street who believes in evolution. I'm really talking about the published spokesmen, the people, the doctors, the scientists who have published these things as though they were true. Check your textbooks on biology, for example. You'll see exactly what I'm talking about. The language is always there. They'll talk about things like beneficial adaptations. And you have to ask yourself, well, how do we know what's beneficial if we don't have a standard? How can we tell we're getting better if we don't know that we were worse? How do we know that we're not getting worse and we used to be better? How do we know that millions of years ago we already reached our prime and we're on the decline ever since? We think we're going into a state of advancement. The fact is we're in a state of decline. But there's no way of knowing that if you don't have a standard, right? If you have nothing to measure it against. But remember, if you have a standard, an objective fixed standard, you have to have an authority because standards require authority to be there, to be fixed, to be authoritative. And that authority can't just pop into existence and then what you're really doing is you're talking about God again. Any comparative words like progress, advancement, good, better, best, superior, inferior, decline, improvement. All of those things require an objective standard. And nature, the God of the evolutionists, with a capital N, nature does not have one. Or if it does, it's not intelligent enough to communicate that standard, and we are left to assume in the dark, groping in the dark here, what that is. Also, any words that imply any creative or decision-making ability, like the word create, or design, or engineered, or organized, or adapted, etc., all of that implies necessarily an objective standard. Because in order to create or decide or anything like that, you need intelligence. And blind forces of nature are not intelligent. They are blind, they are deaf, they are dumb, they are impersonal, they are non-thinking, whatever they are. You can't make decisions, because decisions requires intelligence. Intelligence requires godlike ability, and God isn't part of the evolutionary model. In contrast, our intelligent creator has provided us with a stated purpose for creating the world and human existence, spiritual responsibilities, even our final destination. We know where everything came from. We know our purpose in life, and through God here, by His Word, we know everything of where this thing called life is going ultimately. We don't know all the details, but we know the big picture. We know enough to make a decision about that future. And that life is going there with or without your cooperation. In other words, just because you guffaw and go, "Oh, I don't believe in all that," well, it's still going there. You're still going to stand before the Lord someday and give an account for your life, whether you believe in Him or not. So you would be wise then to be prepared based on what God says to be ready for that. Many times God has said in His Word, and I mean many, it's replete throughout His Word, "I will be their God, they will be my people." That is a thematic statement that tells us that there is a stated purpose for us being here. That's what God wants. He wants to be our God, and He wants us, whoever we are, whoever decides to be with God, He wants us to be His people. God created, not allowed to evolve, but created human beings to worship Him, to choose their own eternal destination, and to live with the rewards and consequences of their own decisions. Think about that. That says intelligence, purpose, design, engineering. All those things that we said need an objective standard, God is our objective standard. We have it in God. Now, like I did last time, their first five and then the second five are here now. We have these things that are all claiming to be true in evolution, and yet we know that they're not. They defy any evidence. They defy any historical provability. They defy empirical objective standards or what they call the scientific method. They defy even our modern observation. They defy common sense. All these different things. And yet it's being touted as scientific, fact, truth, rational. And surprisingly, we're being touted as a bunch of ignorant people who don't know anything. We exercise irrational faith. And that we believe in a God that we've never seen, and yet we know that He exists because of it, out of necessity of what is made, which is exactly what Paul said in that quote I gave you earlier. Many people say, well, it's not rational to believe in the supernatural. Well, that's a statement of opinion, not fact. The fact is, it is entirely rational to believe in the supernatural if and when sufficient evidence exists to support that premise. It is completely rational to believe in God, even though you haven't seen Him, if there is evidence to prove that existence necessarily. Given the premise of an all-powerful, all-knowing Creator, the creation account is fully believable. There does exist sufficient evidence for our Creator, and just because some people, or even most people, refuse to accept that doesn't make that statement any less true, or any less real, or any less believable. Human nature, remember, always gravitates to the path of least resistance anyway. We are not surprised by that. In contrast, there is not a single specific irrefutable proof, not a single one, that has ever been offered to support evolution, and yet people believe in it anyway and label it science. My intent for this series is not to condemn everyone who believes in evolution, nor to examine forensically every argument about evolution. Rather, it is simply to show at its very core, because that's really what I did as I went for the jugular here, Okay? At its very core, evolution is neither rational nor scientific as it is often claimed to be. I'm going to let you decide which sounds the most logical premise, that of a supernatural, all-powerful, all-knowing creator, or that of blind forces of nature inexplicably creating things on its own without any reason, stated purpose, or blueprint. You think about that and think how that sounds, and I'll let you decide on that, okay? So I'll leave you with that. If there's anyone here tonight that is ready to become a Christian, or if there's anything that we can help you with in our prayers and our encouragement, if you need to come forward tonight, then this will be your time to do so as we stand and sing the song that Bob